Welcome in to another edition of the Flagrant 2 Podcast with Bill Ryder, that is me, and Reed Forgrave, and of course our producer who worked in the NBA for nearly a decade, producer Joey. We're going to take a little bit of a step back today from the day-to-day nitty-gritty of the National Basketball Association and tell you some behind. We're going to pull the curtain ever so slightly back, and if you guys like this podcast, we will tell you some super fucked up candid stories next time. And I'm going to try, because it blew Reed's mind. Joey was just made me laugh coming in. Let's just talk about, I'm going to try not to talk about the Mandela effect too much, because Joey, you said that on Monday when I did this, it just, Reed was like in a bad place.
Reed was, we were just both fascinated and wanted to see how long you'd go. And it was pretty incredible. If you didn't listen to Monday's podcast, go back. You'll learn something and you'll be fascinated. I wish we had video of Reed's reaction.
I've spent a lot of time on Wikipedia ever since then, learning all about interesting things that I don't understand.
You just said Wiki real weird.
Wikipedia.
Hey, man, in an alternate universe, it probably is called Wiki.
I was in a bad place to start that podcast on Monday, and things just evolved from there. So is what it is, I suppose.
In any universe, Lance Stephenson should be the captain of the All-Star game. A message we send to Adam Silver that, sir, you are a remarkable commissioner, maybe the all-time greatest, but we will not abide this voting for the captain. This aggression against tradition will not stand, man. Lance Stephenson, vote for him. Born Ready All-Stars. In fact, we've got a message from Lance Stephenson. Right now, I have to do this and draw it out because our producer is always prepared.
Born ready.
There
Born
he is.
Ready.
Lance. Lance, what was that, bro?
Born ready.
Love everything about that. Read Where should we start on the pull back the curtain? I've got a Chris Paul story that's mind-blowingly amazing, but I'm going to save it for later in the podcast or the next one because it could be an entire pot. Like the great Bill Ryder, Chris Paul surprise showdown of 2015 probably? 14. We'll do a different one.
14. Yeah, that's a great story. And it informs, I think, not just your feelings on Chris Paul, but it pulls back the curtain on that organization. You a few podcasts ago, you talked about this awesome confrontation.
Oh, no.
That. Yeah. Bill, for those who don't know Bill, Bill's a man who is just not shy for confrontation. I am a Midwestern diplomat type. Bill is, even though he grew up in
you're from Pittsburgh.
Iowa.
Well, I live. What are you talking about?
Whatever, bicoastal Bill.
You're such a bandwagon guy. You know, just my Midwest.
Where I live. It's where I live. Everyone around me is passive aggressive.
Cool. Can I move to Prague and be Czech?
Yeah, I'd give that to you if you're in Prague for 2 years and you say, "I'm a Czech resident." Yeah,
it's just the Czech in me. It's the history of resilience in the face of the Russians. What are you talking about? You're from Iowa. What do you mean?
Did you know what my the one awesome ethnicity that I have in me is? It's Hungarian Gypsy. True story. Anyway. Yeah, tell me about Chris Broussard, because Bill likes confrontation and does not shy away from it and creates some pretty funny stories.
Yeah, so I'm not a big believer in protecting the media from their own lies and bull. In fact, later in the thing, I will tell an Eric Spoelstra LeBron media. Amazing story that I think highlights this, right? Like, I don't think you should call out media, but when media are full of crap and they sort of shape a narrative and you know they're doing it intentionally incorrectly or they're carrying water for someone or whatever it may be, and they framed an argument, I think you have a responsibility to note that. And I'll make an example on the positive side, even though he's sort of a friend and a colleague. Adrian Wojnarowski is one of the best reporters of any sports media we've ever met. Every time he gets a story right, people are like, not only is this story reported, it's reported by a guy that's never wrong. Therefore, it's true, right? So like when you talk about Woj, you talk about the context of certainty, right? I don't understand when we don't do the same thing on the other end of the spectrum, because there are reporters who are the anti-Woj who bring uncertainty or the certainty that the story is probably not right. It's sort of the context of this as I defend myself for calling out a colleague. So I had just moved to Miami. I moved to Miami in like 7 days notice of my big break in my career.
And this was
day one. I was pretty hard on LeBron. And yeah. Like, you know, mother me and yelled at me in the club. And I like the PR staff now. We get along well now. But, like, it was a battle. Like, it was like being in high school as a new kid. Like, in the beginning, a lot of those beat writers, and I'm friends with most of them, I went to Brian Winter's wedding, wouldn't speak to me. Brian would. But, like, most of those guys were like, you know, Bill's not right. Because the Heat had a remarkable grasp of control on that media, that group of media, even the powerful ones, right? There's like a sycophantic sort of nature of how things are covered there. There just is. And I'm not taking a shot at this guy, and I respect the hell out of him, but like Dan Le Batard, not call him a sycophant, but like that guy is uber positive toward the Heat. So when you have a highly powerful person like Riley, who is an effective machine, and the most important media member and talented media member that rightfully everyone wants to emulate, who is more sort of pro team, creates a lot of pressure in a market to be positive. I wasn't. Create a lot of issues, right? However, when you're the one sort of like lone voice of whatever accurate negativity, I suppose you would call it, you would be shocked how quickly you can get sources, right? So the Heat start 9-8. You guys remember the Heatles thing? Joey, where were you during the start of the whole Miami Heat craziness, 2010-11?
I was just starting in Charlotte with the Hornets.
What's that?
I was just starting with the Hornets. Yeah.
So you remember, like, in fact, they played the Hornets early. Like, you remember, like, in fact, actually, one of my stories later in the podcast takes place in the press room in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Later on. But you remember, like, everyone hated that team. The tension around that team, people on the road booed LeBron. There's a lot of stress, right? Yep. They started 9-8. And a story came out from Chris Broussard. And I'm doing this off memory, so forgive me for the details. Citing sources saying that something I think had happened in a practice, Spoelstra had disrespected LeBron James, and he should basically preserve his calling for him to be fired, right? And I could have been just a, you know, like a 5-year-old child who would have been able to recognize that Broussard, who had come up at Akron, who had a history of covering LeBron favorably, who one might say carried water for LeBron, was basically doing LeBron's bidding. I also had some sources at this point because people who were, you know, your enemy's enemy is your friend, right? And people who were worried about LeBron sort of growing influence in that organization, that it might damage people that they respect in the organization, became sort of quick sources. And I love the cloak and dagger bull. Like, I'll tell the Chris Paul story later, but I had a source within the Clippers organization who used to make me, when I broke a story on that team, used to make, after the Chris Paul confrontation, used to make me meet him at like random Mexican restaurants in LA when the team was out of town in a secret booth. I swear to you, in a, like a secret where you couldn't see anybody. It was and like we had to leave at separate times. This happened with the Heat too. So I wrote a column, probably a little aggressive me, pointing out because this was a major national story. Someone was calling for Spoelstra to be fired. Spoelstra was this sort of unknown coach. He had disrespected LeBron. It was clear as day. LeBron was the source, right? Or LeBron's people. So I write a column saying Chris Broussard, very respect, you know, I covered my ass a little bit, very respected journalist, but clearly is doing this at the behest of LeBron. So the story here, what I wrote when I was at Fox, shouldn't be sources want Spoelstra fired. The story was LeBron trying to get Spoelstra fired. That's the real story. That's the interesting story, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So LeBron had hired a guy, I don't remember his last name, who worked in New York, who was like his PR guy, right? And I'm actually, you know this about me, I'm a creature of habit. I eat the same thing every day at the same place. It's weird, right? So I'm living in temporary housing. Fox put me in temporary housing before I moved to South Beach. I'm living in Brickell. I'm at some random restaurant I'm always at. I'm having the same thing. And I'm sitting there on my phone, like my phone rings, and it's this guy, it's LeBron's PR guy. And I'm like, hey, what's up? You know, whatever your name is. And he's like, we really don't appreciate this story. And he like, I remember like sitting there and he like had like two really fascinating analogies, like really like as he sort of like ripped me a new asshole. Like, wow, that's in-. Like it was almost like a boat analogy. Right. And it was, like, there were two. And, you know, I'm a writer. I'm like, oh, that's really well said. So I go, I disagree and blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, I just think you need to, you know, understand. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right, well, you know, I just, you know, I've got sources. Cool. Hangs up. Like 5 minutes go by. Phone rings again. It's somebody from the Miami Heat. They're like, they start giving me the same exact, and I mean the same exact speech, and they use the same two amazing like metaphors, including the boat metaphor. And I'm like, oh, I'm not gonna be an asshole here. Like they're clearly reading from a script, but one guy's a publicist from New York hired to like make LeBron look good. right? So it's his job. The script's fine. The other guy is, you know, works for the Heat. It's his job to protect LeBron. I respect that. I hang up the phone. Then, so I'm eating. My phone rings. And it's like a number I've never – it's like a Bristol number. Near, I don't remember. It's like a number I've never seen. And I'm like, hello? And I hear, is this Bill Ryder? And I'm like, yeah, man. Let's go. This is Chris Broussard. And, like, I worked for FoxSports.com. But remember, Reed, there was this weird partnership with Fox Sports South. So, like,
right.
You could go to the site and not – like, I was a writer. I didn't work for TV. He's like, you – this is the irony of this, right? You – because now he works for Fox Sports, one of the TV guys. You TV guys don't know anything about Real Journey. He just starts, screaming at me, dropping F-bomb. I've never talked to Chris Broussard in my life. And I'm thinking, like, how did he get my phone number? Right? Like, my number's not public. It was a brand new number. I got a 305 number. So I had it for, like, you know, 17 NBA games. A brand new number. No one should have had it. Obviously, like, the Heat had it, and LeBron's PR guy had it because I gave it to him. So he's, like, screaming at me. And I'm just, like, I'm actually, like, I have him on mute because I wanted to finish my food before it got cold because I'm super cheap. So I'm just kind of, like, listening. He starts to read the exact same speech, including with the boat analogy. I'm, like, this fucking guy is literally reading from a script given to him by LeBron James or LeBron James's people. Like, this is unbelievable.
That's crazy.
So, being a little confrontational, I may or may not have said to him after like 30 minutes, like, hey, man, because he was like being disrespectful. And I finally, like, look, Chris, I don't know you. You don't know me. You're obviously like not nearly the reporter you think you are because I don't work for broadcast media. I work for, like, it would have taken a simple Google search to sort of realize, like, so if you've been attacking for 30 minutes a medium that I don't practice. So cool. Great job. Please be respectful. If you're not, we're going to have an issue in this conversation. I don't want to have a bad, you know, he's Chris Broussard. And he just starts screaming at me. And so I guess I may or may not have pointed out to him that the next time you decide to pose as a journalist and represent LeBron James's interests, you should probably be wise enough to not read from the exact script LeBron gave to several people who called before you because you revealed yourself to be an absolute and total LeBron guy. And if you continue this conversation, I'm going to write about it. And he hung up.
That's what he hung up?
Oh, well,
man.
The point is, and I guess now that, you know, maybe. But by the way, like, everybody carries water for somebody. I mean, this is the nature of sourcing and why you have to be good at it. And I would argue in Chris's case, maybe a little more careful. Because the point was he didn't. And I think I said this to him. Like, hey, man, don't be mad at me. Mask your sourcing a little bit better. Reed, you and I have both. I've broken stories. You've broken stories. You have to go out of your way to, A, know who's playing you. Everyone's playing you. You just have to make sure it's accurate, right? Everyone has an angle. And, B, protect your sources. I mean, like, protect.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For me, the point of sort of pulling back the curtain here is the idea players don't read is a farce. The idea they don't care about their image is a farce. And I like LeBron. I think he's a great and interesting guy. And I have a very sort of, like, he doesn't care about me at all, but BD used to. You know, he used to care about what I wrote.
Yeah.
Just when I called him in the year after, sort of culminating that sit-down interview with Fox Sports 1, there are the really smart ones work the media behind the scenes, and the really, really smart ones work the media by having reporters they can turn to. You know, like, and so you have to sort of, you know, Chris, fair or not, over time, started to develop a reputation for someone whose sourcing perhaps didn't live up to the expectations that sort of come with the rigorous job. Now, maybe that was super unfair. Maybe it wasn't super unfair. I can't speak to Chris's work. I can just speak to this phone call 7 years ago. And of all the people who called and were angry that I had angered LeBron, Chris was the angriest. Now, Chris was angry that, like, you know, you don't know my sources. How dare you? And that's probably fair. Like, looking back, it's kind of aggressive to go after somebody's sources. But also, like, LeBron was a story. And, you know, if you can source out or suss out that LeBron is trying to get his coach fired 17 games into a season when it's still December, you know, it's something you're right about.
As much as you caught early in those Heat, those times with the Heat, most of that stuff, that the tea leaves that you were reading in November and December, most of that came out by May and June that year.
Yeah, dude, there were some crazy – I mean, I had the Heat, like, I had a story that I was going to do. Probably shouldn't tell the story anymore, but, like, I was, and basically the Heat didn't want me to do it, but someone in the organization was like, it was Spoelstra. Like, no, you can do it. I don't care. Cause Spoelstra was cool. And so the Heat basically, like, gave it to someone else to write a story that I was doing. And I had to like go to that person who I liked and be like, if you write this story, I'm going to write about you in a column really aggressively. And yeah, I shouldn't. Yeah, I'll tell that story another day because it makes me.
Making of the sausage, bro. Yeah, making of the sausage.
And that, by the way, he and I are not friends anymore. We don't speak to one another. But I'll say this about like that time. I was a feature writer and sort of an investigative reporter, more of a feature writer, who had transitioned quickly to a columnist. And Jason Whitlock, who I knew from the Kansas City Star, very graciously for the first like 5 or 6 weeks, like edited every column, gave me advice, taught me how to be a columnist, right? Like, I mean, people love or hate Jason, and Jason and I don't speak, but I'm grateful for the sort of time and energy he put in. And I'll sort of let that sort of be that. But you talk about like being sagacious. I mean, Jason sort of called in advance of that beat. Like, there are going to be reporters who are going to be very defensive of LeBron. Like, stick to your guns and make sure it's all. His advice was like, make sure everything you write is reporting based. But write it as your own voice. Like, remember, Jason used to get a lot of criticism for in Kansas City as a columnist for not having sources. And it turned out he had tons of sources. He just used them to be the smartest guy in print, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. It was advice, because when the Broussard happened thing, I was like, man, like, maybe I shouldn't be yelling at Chris Broussard. And Jason sort of, you know, as a mentor at the time, was like, if you're right, go with it and don't worry about the sort of isolation. So it's an interesting it's an interesting sort of deal. Like, and I'm not trying to like put Woj on Front Street. We're not best friends, but I know him. I say hi to him, right? Like, we worked together at FS1. Adrian was famous when he was working his way up. Hope he doesn't mind that I say this. He never told me this. I just witnessed it. Most of the NBA guys would go out and be social with each other. Adrian wouldn't. He'd go out. I'm sure he was having dinners with like agents and stuff. Like, the people who cared more about the work and less about impressing their NBA colleagues are the ones who succeeded.
That's journalism in a nutshell, man.
I have no idea if this is boring for people or not, but it was interesting.
I don't know. I love talking journalism. I love.
Joey, do you find this interesting as a non-journalist?
The LeBron stuff is, it's sort of, I mean, I'm not overly surprised hearing it. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit before, right, but but it is a little eye-opening. I mean, the lengths that athletes will go to try to sway the narrative in their favor. I mean,
they hire people.
Yeah.
It always amazes me when like a guy will reach out, and this happens all the time, be like, hey, I'm this guy's basically fixer, right? When a guy gets his reputation screwed up. And so you're dealing with somebody's high-priced person behind the scenes, while that person will be like at press conference, be like, I don't care what you guys say. But also it's human nature. I mean, I haven't been written about in a while, but Deadspin in the big lead like used to crush me back in the day. And it's both sort of like, you know, it's nice to be written about. It's also a little unnerving, even when they're – and then when they get stuff wrong, you're like, man, you guys.
Yeah, there's nothing worse, man. Getting called out by Deadspin, that's happened to me a few times. And it is it keeps you on your toes, brother.
It does.
Even when they're right, it can still be – even when you know you are right, it can still be like an unnerving experience.
It is kind of crazy, dude. Speaking of keeping on your toes, I know this isn't a NBA story, but since he's Bo Jackson, I figure it counts since it's every single sport. I love this story. Do you mind if I bring this up?
Solidly embarrassing for me.
It is. It's a great story.
I was such a kid too.
Because you and I both covered politics, social justice, feature writing before we transitioned to sports. We have a sort of a different background, and I think that it gives us, you know, a different perspective on sports. However, it also means that we had our first sort of like high profile interviews. Most guys' first sports interactions are like with the high school coach, right?
Right, exactly.
Now with Bo Jackson. Yours was not. What happened?
Yeah. Oh, so bad, man. I think I'd been on the job at Fox. I'd been a sports writer for like a week, 2 weeks. It was like, I'm writing a story about, and you know, it's weird because like you cover political journalism, you work in the newspaper world, you're used to being around powerful people, right? But like you don't get nervous when you're around like, hey, I'm hanging with the Secretary of State of Iowa, you know, or talking to these political operatives.
Wait, but
like,
even the president, you can use to anything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Get used to anything. You pee next to Barack Obama. But there's something about
people. If you don't listen to the podcast, Reed once peed next to Barack, but Barack went in the stall.
Yeah, Barack stood in the stall. It was a little weird.
Most famous person you've ever peed next to. Go.
Barack Obama. Terry Francona, close second.
Bill Clinton. But I was pretty good. I was trying to interview him. Joey?
I don't really know off the top of my head, but I'm sure it's an NBA player. I'm trying to think if there was ever a time where me and MJ were in the same restroom when I worked for the Hornets. I don't think there was.
Who was more famous? Like, if you had to rank MJ, Clinton, Barack, 1 to 3 in fame, what's the ranking? Is it Obama, MJ, Clinton?
I think it might be just because of the social media, right?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Yeah.
MJ's close, though. Like, don't you think?
I agree.
Yeah.
But I think I'd love to know what MJ sort of – if you are 24, like, do you think about MJ the way that, like, people our age think about, like, Jim Brown or Larry Bird, right? Where you're like, yeah, great.
Even Bird, I mean, he was still
– that's true.
He was still in the league when – you know, I'm 38. Bills, were you? You 40?
30, not 40. Almost.
Almost 40, wow.
21.
Yeah, bro. But, like, it is interesting, man. Like, but Bo Jackson, when we were growing up in the 1980s, he was LeBron, you know? For about, what, 2, 3, 4 years, he was the most famous athlete on Earth.
I have, like, 50 of his rookie cards and the Bo note, where, like, the black and white with the...
What American kid in the 1980s didn't have the, what was it, Bo-Knows football? The one where he has the baseball bat between his shoulders, he's wearing the pads. Bo Jackson was a hero. I remember reading, like, his, you know, ghost-written autobiography when I was in, like, fourth grade. And obviously, that career ended all potential, what he could have been. But anyway, so I'm a sports writer for a week. And the first – I referred to this in an earlier podcast. The first story that I did was a big, long one about Ryan Sandberg, and I threw up on the way to the interview. That's what I do. I was super nervous.
I never knew that story.
Yeah. Yeah. Threw up in my hotel room before interviewing Ryan Sandberg for the first time. But then I ended up – so I was writing about in Kansas City. You used to live in Kansas City. You know this museum, the Negro League Baseball Museum, right next to the Jazz Museum.
Oh, it's actually a really special spot.
Oh, dude, it's amazing. That is it is a cool part of that city, and that it is one of the best museums I've ever been to. If anyone's in
worth
city.
A trip,
the way that it melds politics and sports is and civil rights is absolutely remarkable. But anyway, I'm doing a story that they had some political issues. They had a bad director and had some money issues. They're having a fundraiser at this really nice golf course outside Kansas City, and I talked with the guy who was the new director, and he's like, "Yeah, I'll hook you up with all these players." Who was the Kansas City Chiefs guy that wore the Band-Aid on his nose? Neil Smith.
Yeah,
he was there, and I'm just like chatting him up, and I didn't realize. And I'm like writing down quotes about the Negro League Museum. I know he's like a famous athlete of some sort, but I'm like, "And what is your name?" And he's like, "Neil Smith." And I literally said to him, "I was like, oh, sorry, you weren't wearing the Band-Aid." So stupid. Anyway, like this guy gets me time with Bo Jackson. It's like, hey, go talk to Bo. And it's like Joey's D'Angelo Russell interview. There's like 15 people around, and I'm throwing a microphone in Bo's mouth. And I say to Bo, I'm like, well, okay, give him a softball question. Like, so Bo, why are you here today for the Negro League Museum? And then I was going to ask him some actual thoughtful questions. And I ask this to him, and there's complete silence for like 2 seconds. And he's like, what did you just ask me? That is the stupidest question I've ever heard in my life. Did you guys hear what he just asked me? He asked me why I'm here. So I'm just like, well, I mean, I know why you're here, Bo, but
it's kind of sounds like a jerk move, dude.
It was kind of a jerk move, but it gave me a good story to tell. It gave me a story to tell.
Did it? Are we sure?
I was so embarrassed. I'm not sure if I've ever been that embarrassed in journalism. I'm not sure if I've ever been that nervous. Like, I had dinner with Bill Murray once, and that's like one of the other times, like recently, that I got really, really nervous being around a famous person. But I'm not sure.
I stood next to Bill Murray outside CBS News last week, 2 weeks ago.
Did you really talk to him?
No.
He's the best. He's the best.
Oh, by the way, Reed, and I don't know that I have told this before, but buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, and there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events, a SeatGeek seamless mobile experience. You can buy and sell tickets in just 2 taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. In fact, Reed and I have the SeatGeek apps on our phones. It's by far the easiest way we've personally found to shop for those tickets. We can be anywhere in the Uber, hanging out, talk about parallel dimensions, and with just a few taps, we can instantly find seats. Like Reed, you used the SeatGeek app a couple days ago to buy tickets to Arcade Fire for this past Sunday, and as we discussed in the Monday podcast, you awkwardly like touched one of the members of the band.
Not one of
them. High five. I mean, not
Butler.
Awkwardly
high
touched.
High five. I didn't like
awkwardly
grab his,
about the touching.
It's Tukas.
No, I meant it came out awkwardly on Monday.
Oh, it did. Yes, this is correct. This is very correct.
So,
it did. Anyway,
best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, and to get this $20 off, put the promo code in I. That's EYE today. That's promo code I, EYE, for $20 off your very first purchase at SeatGeek. You will not be disappointed. It's a really, really cool app. I wanted to ask you about this Mello thing, Joey Levin. Did you guys see this a few days ago? It was like 2 or 3 days ago, maybe 4 days ago. Mello tweeted out a picture of the team playing.
Oh, my God.
And the nose is like, first of all, do you really believe that was caused by a bird?
It's like the biggest bird, like a flying dinosaur bird, maybe. Holy cow.
I do. I mean, think about how fast a plane is going. I mean, it doesn't matter.
An alternate universe.
Mandela effect.
It was terrible. I mean, and I've, Joe, I'm curious to hear, like, I've been in an emergency landing going to a Super Bowl where I was like rocking out. I was like watching Justified, and I looked down and like the ground was coming really quickly. I'm like, why didn't we just take off? And I looked left and everyone had their like heads in their like laps. And I was like, I had my laptop on, like, you know, watching Raylan, like drink some bourbon and stare down a bad guy. Joey, you worked in the NBA for a long time. You travel with the team. When you fly that much in private planes, any harrowing moments?
Yeah. I mean, there was never an emergency landing. But there were times where there were many times where I was just like, how are we flying through this right now? If this was just a domestic flight on Delta or United or something, we wouldn't be in this weather.
Crazy turbulence all the time.
Well, do you remember? I can't remember the year now, but it had to be probably 4 or 5 years ago now. There was these storms in Chicago, and like cars were being flipped over, and there was just like damage everywhere. It was like wind storms. I think there was like tornadoes and stuff. It was a crazy storm. We were playing the Bulls, and we flew into Chicago during that storm, and I'm telling you, it had to be maybe 2 minutes before we landed. You can't see me on our plane was almost completely tilted,
and it almost felt
like you could tell, you know, when you're going through turbulence, the pilot, you can feel when they're trying to like get control. It felt like he had no control until the very last second, and as we were landing, he got it. But I mean, the wind was so bad, and I'm just thinking to myself, like, how are we flying through this? Like,
was MJ on that plane?
No. MJ never flew with on the plane that I can remember that I was on.
Who would have been the most famous person in that plane if it had gone badly? We'd be talking about this podcast right now with producer Steve or whatever.
I can't remember what year. I'm trying to think of who the coaching staff
was. Kemba there?
It may have been early on. Yeah, Kemba was there the second year I was in the league. So it might have been him, depending on who was on the coaching staff. Might have been Charles Oakley. I don't know.
Worst flight of my life was coming back from L.A. Heat game. I think it was a Heat game. Maybe it was a Lakers game. I can't remember. And I sat next to Reed. You've probably been through this. I was on an aisle, and there was a middle-aged woman and her daughter, who must have been 4 or 5. And she's like – and they're like – They turn the plane on. You know when you turn a plane on, like the air things come out and you can feel the engine, and they burst into tears, like on the ground. I'm like, ma'am, are you okay? And she's like, is everything okay? I'm like, they'd never flown before, right? They were really scared. And the mom's crying, so the daughter's crying. I'm like, don't worry, it'll be fine. Flying's extremely safe. You know, I used to fly 120,000 miles a year, right? When I was covering the league. And so, like, it's all going to be okay. And you know, one of the things that really annoys me about airplanes is that you can't get up and go to the bathroom if you want to. And like, I think the pilots leave those seatbelt signs on too long. And when you fly as much as we do, Reed, we get upgraded to first class, right? A lot. And dirty secret about first class is the rules don't apply. You could like, you could like literally just get up and like urinate like on the floor, and the flight attendant be like, thank you, sir, for relieving yourself there. It's so kind of you. I will clean it up. It's crazy. it's a different Jerry Maguire was right. It's not a different way to travel. It's a different life, at least for those few hours. But I was not in first class at this time. I was not in none of the miles to sort of qualify for upgrades. And but I flew enough to be like, whatever. I don't care if there's going to, you know, a seatbelt on. I'll do what I want. And I was like, I got real good at like, because flight attendants be like, sir, the seatbelt sight's on. Signs on. I got real good at like, yeah, I can see that. And just keep going. Right? Like, you know, kind of a jerk,
man.
I go to the bathroom, man. I drink a lot of coffee when I fly. And or Bloody Marys. So I'm coming back, and the captain's like, there's going to be turbulence. Please get back to your seat. And you kind of feel it start to shake. And there's nothing worse than being in the bathroom. And like, so I came back, and I've never experienced before. The plane hit so much turbulence that I put my hand up, right? And my hand touched the ceiling, and I crashed onto the ground.
Oh, jeez.
So I crawled back to my seat and sat down. And this poor, I mean, this woman was, and this, I mean, I've never, it's the howls from a human being you would expect if they were certain that death was imminent. I got to tell you, man, it was like 15 minutes of like praying, and they're sending out, oh, Jesus's. And so like, I believe you, Joey, like you travel enough, and I was flying commercial where they won't fly through that crap. And this was just, I think, like coming back from LA and you go over the desert, some of those heat, you know, the heat will get you. The heat shifts bad.
I'm not a big praying guy, but every time I go up in a plane, I pray every time at liftoff. It still freaks the crap out of me, man. When you think about what you're doing, 7 miles up in the air in a little toothpaste tube. Ooh.
Yeah. I gotta fly it pretty soon. So let's talk about it.
Let's talk about Mike D'Antoni.
Oh, actually, can I put producer Joey on the spot for
absolutely.
So Joey, where are we at time wise in this thing, guy? I probably shouldn't ask, but I'm gonna ask. It was like,
you're about 30 minutes in.
30 minutes. So on our sort of like take a step back podcast here on the Flagrant 2, which you can subscribe to on iTunes, rate and review, or if you're in the alternate universe, you can subscribe on iLoons. That was dumb. That was real stupid. Joey, we're going to like ease into these stories. Can you tell us are you able to tell the tagging the Rollman story?
Yeah. I mean, how like basketball nerdy do you want me to get with it? Because there's some things that have to be explained to
get nerdy. Joe.
Joey, you're a natural storyteller. How inside the basketball should I go to?
Jerk.
Oh, the look on your face. You look good. I'm just kidding. Great storyteller.
I mean, I worked, you talked about it plenty on the podcast. I worked in the league for a long time. A lot of different coaches. They were all good coaches, except I'm not going to say the name, but there is some questionable coaching along the way.
Let's come up with a name for this coach, Reed. Let's call him Coach Phoenix.
Why Phoenix?
Because the Phoenix rises from the ashes even when it shouldn't.
I think we need a better name than that.
Coach. Just call him Coach X. You come up with a name.
I'm more of a critic. I just would like to lean back and just be a critic.
I want to throw that Theodore Roosevelt quote in your face that LeBron always does.
Oh, I find that it's such a great quote, and it's used so obnoxiously. What's the full quote?
I don't have it memorized.
Let's call him Coach Theodore. Coach Theodore.
Coach Theodore.
You brought right, Theodore Roosevelt. Coach Theodore.
This is
Coach
terrible.
Theo.
This is a terrible podcast. This one's terrible.
So I won't say the name, but
Coach X.
If you really wanted to know, there's certain details you could look them up, and then you can figure it out. So. We had played the San Antonio Spurs once already that year. This is with the Bobcats. No. I'll give you a hint. We were the Bobcats still. So there you go. In the first game against the Spurs, I think they must have hit 19, 20, 20. I don't know. It was crazy. I think it was like a franchise record in threes that we gave up that game. It was insane. So the second game when we were in San Antonio, we're at shoot-around. Putting in our defensive game plan, and we're just going over how are we going to guard middle pick and rolls. Pretty basic play. Pretty much every team in the league, every coach coaches it the same way. And this coach is like, last game, we gave up 19, 23s, so this game, we're staying attached to shooters, And when the screener rolls down the middle, we're not tagging him from the opposite side. You're staying attached to those corner shooters. And one player who I won't name, but
I love the story.
He's standing. He's a center. He's standing in the middle of the paint.
Player Alaska
raises his hand and says, "So we're not tagging the roll man?" He's like, "Yeah, we're not tagging the roll man." So he raises his hand again. He's like, "So we're just going to give up dunks? They're just going to dunk on us." And he's like, "So what? Let them dunk on us. We're not giving up threes."
This and, reminds me of a column I once read. Please continue.
Our GM is in the gym watching this. Go down.
Oh, the GM's in the – don't say his name because it'll –
No, the GM is in the gym watching. This is all – I mean, this is – yeah. And everyone's just sort of like, what is happening? And we went through it.
I have a question real quick. So you're – a coach is giving advice, X's and O's advice, that obviously is incompetent, right?
Yeah.
It is basketball malpractice. He's instructing his team to basically give up obvious and easy open lane of the basket. What's the look on the faces of the guys? Like, do they hide their contempt? Is it like, is he, what the f***, rolling eyes? Like, what's the vibe like?
I mean, I will say, I think we had already gotten to a point in that season where a lot of guys had tuned out. We had some rough times early on when I was in Charlotte. And I think a lot – either they weren't listening or a lot of them laughed once this player not to be named raised his hand and said, "So we're just going to give up dunks." And this coach not to be named said, "So what?
So what?" All right. I apologize. I was just curious about the vibe. Please continue.
So we did it. They listen. Hey, coach says it. You want to be on the floor. You do what the coach says. So they did it. And first play of the game, we're playing the Spurs, middle pick and roll. Tiago Splitter rolls down the paint.
Quite the athlete.
Tiago Splitter rolls down, untouched, dunk. Next time down the floor, middle pick and roll, untouched, dunk. We're just like, how long? It must have been two or three times in the game where he was stubborn. He tried to stick with it, and we got blown out again. But we didn't give up as many threes. We did not give up as many threes.
To be fair. There's an emerging basketball philosophy that you should give up as many dunks as possible so you don't give up threes. I've seen it other places.
It's brilliant.
I've heard
it's
that.
Brilliant, dude.
I've heard that I've, once.
100% dunk percentage.
I'm
going to
find some wise call. I don't know. It's out there somewhere. I'll find it. Is that good? Are we good? Like, I feel like this is like a tease podcast. Because like the Chris
I
Paul podcast.
I think we should frankly do these every once in a while. Just like. Shooting the shit about fun.
Why do you gotta swear? Now Joey's gotta bleep out the fucks.
Does. Who was the writer who described a scene inside the Cleveland Cavaliers locker room? Described LeBron naked, like graphically? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, it was he thanked me in his freaking book.
That's not good.
No, it wasn't. Scott Rabb.
Oh yeah. That was creepy.
What was crazy about that? Weird. Scott Rabb was a guy who wrote for Esquire, maybe still does, was a marvelous writer. I haven't read him in a while. Reed, you actually write for some of those magazines now. Is Rab still in the
still
game?
For Esquire. Yeah.
Yeah, talented writer. Nice guy. And LeBron's first year, he wrote a book called The Horror of Akron.
Horror of Akron. The most unkind title for a book ever.
He went into LeBron the locker room and did, in fact, a great – I didn't read it, but describe LeBron's private parts. I couldn't get through the book because there was a part in the book where he wrote at great – if I remember properly, great. Do you guys hear that?
No.
It might be on my end because there are people currently building a TV studio for our show that may happen soon. So you may be hearing drilling.
All right. I'm sorry.
I want to hear about this weird Scott Rabb thing that –
He basically wrote at great length about the various pleasures of his wife and what the sort of sensory reactions were to it. And I just couldn't. It's like, that's private. So I didn't read the book. I did not read the book. I think I even threw them away. I'm sorry, Scott. Thank you for the signed copy and for putting me in the credits, which made the Heat like me even more. I had nothing to do with that book. And well, the crazy backstory to this is like, be careful sort of what you do, because when LeBron went home, the first, I think I may have told the story recently somewhere, maybe on the podcast. When LeBron went back to Cleveland, the Cleveland court Cleveland Clinic Courts, whatever it's called, are out in the burbs a little bit toward Akron, right? So they're closer to LeBron's home. And there was so much media attention the first year that there actually was a staging area, maybe, I don't know, half a mile away at a little business center, like a little strip mall, right? You would go to the strip mall, you would park your car there, and they would take you on buses, right? And obviously the Cavs control who can go have access to their facility. You can't control who goes to the strip mall because, like, there was a Starbucks there or whatever it was. And Scott Rabb was there, I think, with a sign, just like, go Cavs. And they wouldn't give him a credential. And he just looked, like, so sad. And it was just like, you know, I'm like, I think it was like, talk about, like, think they'll ever let me come back. And I think I was just like, bro, you wrote a book called The Whore of Akron. I'm pretty sure you're bitch forever.
Oh, yeah.
That was a mistake.
Like, there's like the obvious, I don't know if it's like an ethical issue, but like breaching of decorum when he's writing about LeBron naked, but like, okay, whatever. Calling your book The Whore of Akron? That's like some next level shit, man.
So I've got one story, but I don't know, it might be boring. I mean, it's like, it's a media story. It's about how the media basically, like, look, I'm not anti-media. I'm pro-media. I believe in the First Amendment. But sometimes the sports media just sort of like go into groupthink. Do we want a story about that, or do we want to save it for next time?
Save it for next time. I think I know which story this is.
It's Eric Spoelstra, LeBron James. My tape recorder was on, catching the media lying story.
Happens. Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like,
it's a good story.
Very pro media, but there are, you know, like any business, there's some bad apples.
Yeah. Let's do this in a week or two, and I will tell. I should have told today. I'll tell the Chris Paul. The Chris Paul story is like long. It's like involved. It's Chris Paul screaming at me. It leads to like the sort of like reporting that exposes the major story, and then this war between me and the Clippers, and just it's a long. One of the guys that I named on the radio a lot is basically a liar. Is now he's gone. Like, it's a real aggressive. So we'll do that. That could be a whole podcast. Bill versus Chris Paul.
Well, and I revealing about his character. I don't want to say character, but like who he is as a leader.
It was
revealing about that organization too. Like, I think that's the thing. Just like politics, it's like you get these like little glimpses, and yet I think some of these little glimpses into, you know, behind the curtain can either be an anomaly or can just, you know, reveal more about the narrative that you're, you know, already following with the team.
All right, we'll do it next time. It is the Flagrant 2 podcast with Reed Forgrave and Bill Ryder. That's me. Reed is the other guy. And producer Joey. Guys, this was really fun.
I got one question for you. Who's okay. more famous, Allen Iverson or Patrick Ewing? Because those are the two most famous people I've peed next to.
Allen Iverson. Ooh, yeah. I want Iverson first. Think AI?
It's tough, right?
I was trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Those are the two most famous people I know for a fact I've peed next to.
You never peed next to Jordan?
I don't know, I can't remember. I don't think so. I think I would remember that.
You'd remember that.
Yeah. So it's AI or Pat.
Well, AI. Yeah.
Did you talk to AI? Like, what was the sort of like?
I worked. He was with us for six games when I was with the Grizzlies.
While you were peeing, bro, not in your lifetime.
Oh, I thought you meant like, was it just like a half? Like,
yeah,
a chance?
We were, of course, we always talked at the urinal.
Yeah, probably. I don't remember. That's a long time ago now. That's like 7 years ago.
Like a, what's up, man?
Probably.
Take that crossover. Yeah.
You playing tonight? Are you playing? That was probably the question. Are you playing tonight? Because he didn't play
tonight?
Much.
Play tonight. Was he a nice guy?
Yeah, he had two. He's another one. I mean, he had two personalities. He had the cameras off and the cameras on, but when the cameras are off, great guy, awesome dude, and really knew the NBA like inside and out, new players that I didn't even scout. When the cameras turned on, I scored 20,000 points, I've been to a championship, I should be starting. He was changed. Yeah,
weird.
You know who else was like that? Al Gore. True.
All right,
say again.
Al Gore changed.
Strange.
All right.
On that note,
this podcast crashed and burned. All right, that's it. We'll see you in a few days. The $1 million duck.